I spent a long time on this sermon, and it's so complex, and it was really hard to get it built. So, if nothing I say makes sense, feel free to say after, during response time, can you explain that? A couple of months ago, a question came up during a sermon about what the 11th commandment should be. Marcia Roy said that when her brother was attending Northeastern University in the 70s, the 11th commandment was, don't judge. When Marcia told that story, I sensed widespread agreement in this group that this would be a good 11th commandment. Now, I love rules. I feel safe with clearly defined social expectations, whether I'm able to meet them or not. I also like to question rules. It's very important to me that I clearly understand the rules I'm following. When I hear a rule repeated as often as I hear, don't judge, I want to carefully consider what it means, whether it's effective, and its place as a moral or spiritual practice. Good judgment is a vital skill in that it is literally a matter of life and death. We all have times when our judgment is better or worse, of course. When I was teaching up in Barrie, I was hanging out with a handful of my male colleagues at recess one time, listening to them tell hair-raising stories of their youthful exploits. I finally asked them, hey guys, is the only reason you all are even alive today is because of sheer luck? And they all said yes. And I myself can attest to times, especially when I was younger, that I was very lucky to avoid major injury when I judged a situation poorly. Although, now that I think about it, I was probably a better judge than I give myself credit for, and not particularly lucky at all. After all, I never got myself into scrapes I couldn't get out of, and I learned from my mistakes. But I know other people who seem continually to lack good judgment. Some people I know and love are chronically poor judges of themselves, situations, and other people. Some of these loved ones are dead, due in whole or in part to poor judgment. The rest live precariously. Don't judge is the last thing I would ever tell these friends. Perhaps you are thinking, okay, we know that good judgment is a good thing. Obviously, you need to judge situations to make sure they are safe. That's not what people mean when they say don't judge. They mean that you shouldn't go around judging other people. Well, I believe that judgment is a constant subconscious or semi-conscious process, including the judgment of other people. But beware of defining judgment as only a negative thing. Unless you are truly surrounded by abusive and dangerous people, which can happen, most of the snap judgments we make about people are either neutral or positive. How often truly do you meet someone who really gives you the creeps? Whereas how often do you meet someone who makes you think, what a neat person. I like this person's taste in clothes. Wow, that person's a great vocabulary. I like how this woman's talking to her kids. These people look like they're having a good time. This one has a nice smile. This one looks like he's in pain. I wonder what's wrong. That one looks energetic. This one looks lonely. That one seems rushed. These are all snap judgments, and they're all positive. They're quick evaluations, not condemnations. Whether they're conscious or subconscious, they give you a place to start interacting with people. Or if not interacting with them, at least giving them a place, however small, in your world. A place where both you and they belong. In this way, I believe that good judgment is a vital brain function that works both consciously and subconsciously, This includes judgments and evaluations of other people. I would never tell anyone to not judge in these ways. It's almost like saying, don't think. I want to emphasize that I believe in freedom of thought. I don't believe you can ever harm someone just by thinking something. You have to act on your thoughts in expression or in deed in order for your thoughts to affect others. That is why I don't consider any kind of judgment, even condemnation, to be necessarily morally wrong. For one thing, judging other people negatively helps me learn what not to do myself. Furthermore, I have met enough truly dangerous people in my lifetime that I cherish my ability to very quickly distinguish who they are and to stay away from them. I don't want to let fear of being morally wrong by mentally condemning another person to interfere with my survival instinct. And I'm always going to stand on the side of thought. I want to mention here that don't judge has a pretty strong whiff of hypocrisy to it. If you tell someone not to judge, it means you are judging them. You're judging their judging. My mother-in-law tells my husband, "You're so judgmental!" Isn't that judgmental of her? Still, as the proposed 11th commandment, don't judge, must have meaning and value. So I will stop thinking about the ways that judgment is necessary or appropriate or harmless and start thinking about the way it bothers people. I think people mainly dislike two things about judging. The first is a feeling of discomfort or anger when people put them into boxes by labels or stereotypes. The second are feelings of self-consciousness or shame when people evaluate their looks or behavior. One very recent example I came across was a short commentary I read on Slate.com about some kind of Facebook motherhood challenge. You post photos that make you proud to be a mother and invite friends whom you consider to be great mothers to do the same. The goal, evidently, is to give women the opportunity to receive positive comments about an often thankless job. The problem with the challenge, according to Alyssa Strauss, the author of this article, and I quote, is the way it reinforces the idea that there is such a thing as a great mother, and it's up to one's peers to determine whether a woman is one. Mothers would really benefit from less scrutiny and judgment, no matter how they fare. Personally, continues the author, I wouldn't want to be targeted, or I wouldn't want to be tagged as great, nor would I want to not be tagged. If a friend called me great, it would make me feel as if they'd been studying me and my child and comparing us to others. That gives me the creeps. If nobody tagged me as a great mother, then I would wonder why I didn't measure up. It's kind of a lose-lose. Along these same lines, my own mother would always bristle at people who told her that she was looking good. She did not want to be judged on what she was wearing, period. To her, clothes were practical. People's friendly comments made her feel self-conscious. Like Alyssa Strauss above, she did not want to be scrutinized and evaluated, even positively, because she wanted to be able to do things without feeling self-conscious about them. Sometimes you want other people's feedback, and sometimes you just don't. These two examples show dislike of self-consciousness, but fear of shame is a much bigger deal. I'll get to that a little later, though. First, I want to talk about aversion to prejudice and labels. And again, I'm going to be very devil's advocate-y. Like other kinds of judging, I believe prejudice is a conscious or subconscious tool for self-preservation. For example, what if you saw someone who was covered from head to toe with white supremacist tattoos, swastikas on his forehead, racist slogans inked everywhere? I myself would have nothing but prejudice toward this guy. I would judge him based on appearance only, and I'm speaking only for myself. I would not want to get to know him. If I treated him politely, it would be just a cover until such a time as I could get away from him. And if it turned out that he was a recovered white supremacist, I would perhaps contribute to his tattoo removal fund. But I would never fault myself from my initial prejudice. Obviously, though, prejudice is often incorrect and dangerous. A big example is racism. Due to constant messages in the media and society at large, just about every person has what's called implicit bias against people of color. This bias can be shown through tests, which, by the way, are very interesting to take, and I invite you all to check them out if you haven't done so already. You can see them on the internet at implicit.harvard.edu. Implicit racism shows itself all over, from the most minor forms of racial profiling to police brutality. The proliferation of stories we hear of people being shot for knocking on the door while black, running while black, or having a medical emergency while black, attest to just how powerful and deadly our subconscious biases can be. But I'm going to insist that what the real problem is a failure to exercise good judgment. I still believe you can think what you want, but it's vitally important to know what you think. I'm going to repeat that. Think what you want, but know what you think. And you have to know how to deal with your thoughts, both conscious and unconscious. I think that's the whole purpose of the 11th commandment. So remember that joke I made a little while ago about my mother-in-law being judgmental about my husband's judgmentalness? Well, it wasn't really a joke. I think the hypocritical odor of don't judge might be a bigger deal than I thought. And I'm going to explain why, but I want to talk a little more about racism. There's a game you can play with kids where you have to guess the correct card in an array of cards with various pictures. And you can ask yes or no questions to help you hone your guess. For example, let's say half the cards have a green background and the rest of the cards are variously colored. You could ask, does it have a green background? And whether the answer was yes or no, you could eliminate half the cards with that single question. So this strategy, eliminating half the cards at a time, is statistically the best way to play. And you win much faster than you would by asking questions that only eliminate a few cards at a time. So some very clever researchers set up this game with pictures of people. Half the people in the pictures were black and half were white. The best question to ask in that case is the person black or white? But the thing is that white test subjects did not want to ask a question referring to race. And so they kept taking longer to guess the correct card, whereas people of color had no trouble winning the game quickly. Well, I know why people would rather lose a game than refer to race. It's because they thought it would look racist to talk about race. What this means for society at large is that while people of color and others are insisting that racism is alive and well, lots of white people are insisting that they are not racist, in fact, that they are colorblind. Now, I don't doubt that most white people today believe that all people are equal in dignity and rights, and that these people I'm talking about are therefore not racist in an interpersonal sense. But institutional racism certainly exists, and I'm afraid that blindness about race leads to blindness about racism, and blindness about racism leads to an inability or unwillingness to do anything about it. I blame shame. On the one hand, it's good that racism has become a shameful thing, right? We don't want to celebrate violence. On the other hand, I'm afraid it's just been driven underground. I think white people really took it to heart that prejudice is bad. And so they scoured it from their, or I should say, our conscious minds. So what we end up with is a non-racist guy, a cop, who shoots a black man having a heart attack in his own home, insisting that what he did is not a function of racism. And there's no way to prove that it is. there's just a bunch of statistics that indicate that black lives evidently don't matter. Here's my point. The world in which statistics are so very stacked against people of color is obviously a racist world. Yet it is a world without the overt interpersonal racism of 50 years ago. Even David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, claims that he's not racist, only pro-white.
Oh, that's much better.
But so many of today's non-racist people find themselves unwilling or unable to fight institutional racism because they are unwilling or unable to see race itself. They're unwilling to see it because they've been taught that it's shameful to see it. I've just made a pretty complicated argument in a few short paragraphs. I've not only brought up evidence that supports the existence of implicit racism, I've argued that shame about racism might make people even more racist, at least in that it prevents them from seeing institutional racism and fighting against it. Really, it's an argument that would take hours to explore properly, but I felt I had to bring it up, even if the discussion was incomplete. I brought it up as an example of judging, and of judging. Racism is a good example of prejudice, stereotyping, and putting people into boxes, what I referred to before as the first kind of judging that really bothers people. And interestingly, calling someone a racist is an example of the second kind of judging, when you bring shame on a person by evaluating their appearance or behavior. Here's the thing. Let's say you judge correctly 100% of the time when someone is racist. You know what racism looks like, and you can point it out in anybody. That's important. It's vital to use good judgment and to be able to recognize racism wherever it exists. But when you make that accusation to someone, it causes them to feel shame, which is a feeling that often backfires when you try to use it as a tool to get people to behave better. Instead of listening to you, the person will probably become angry or just deny everything, and you won't get much cooperation. It can be very, very tricky to win arguments with people when you are right. If don't judge means to stop assessing and understanding yourself, situations, or other people, I'm not for that. If don't judge means to always show forbearance toward abusive people, I'm not for that either. But if don't judge means to be aware of how scrutiny, shame, and labeling can get in the way of your own needs being met, I'm all for it. Here's what I propose. Instead of don't judge for the 11th commandment, how about something like, listen carefully for judging. Let it remind you to seek the whole story and to attend to the needs and emotions that underlie it. I like this command because it covers all the territory. It allows for the use of good judgment, but it also reminds you that sometimes judging gets in the way of growth and positive change, especially when it contributes to shame in yourself or another. It also, I hope, reminds us to listen carefully to the kind of judging we do unconsciously, which is the kind of judging that gives rise to all the isms of the world. This is why I repeated, think what you want, but know what you think, before, and why I repeat it again. I believe it is a matter of personal responsibility that we know how our subconscious minds affect our choices and responses in daily life. It is also a matter of compassion and care that when we find prejudices in ourselves and others, we try to gently bring them to light instead of pointing a shaming finger. Judgment, even when it's sometimes counterproductive, is too important to command people to stop doing it. Let's have a positive command instead. Let's take care of ourselves. Let us take responsibility for our own hearts and minds. Let us seek to understand what is painful or hidden Let us keep listening.